Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One.
I'm Link Smith here at the National Press Club studios with Ms. Peggy Sands Orchowski, who has written on immigration for over 10 years, and not only in D.C., but on Capitol Hill, and also a longtime member of the National Press Club. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you very much.
It's great that you're here. And just to kick it right off, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then we'll get into some questions?
Well, since we're talking about immigration, let me say that I've had a long personal history of immigration all my life. Like most of us, I have family members who are immigrants. And I lived for over 5 years in South America and over 5 years in Europe. So I've lived over 10 years abroad. I speak four languages and I raised my kids in three. So I'm not afraid of the other if we're going to talk about immigration. And I've written two books on one called Immigration and the American Dream, Battling the Political Hype and Hysteria, which is still pretty relevant today. And the second book that I wrote in 2015 at the 50th anniversary of the 1965 law is called The Law That Changed the Face of America. And they're both available on Amazon.
Can you tell us about the paradox of immigration and why it's the case, appears to be the case, that our nation confuses migration and immigration?
It's really such a basic thing, but I hear people mixing all the time. They're talking about migration and people moving across the world, and then they're suddenly talking about immigrants. And it's really two different things. And maybe the best way to understand it is that immigration is a paradox. So it is a human right that's codified in the universal human rights codicil in the United Nations that every human being has the right to leave their country and to go back to it, too, it says. But every human being has the right to leave their country. No country can keep their citizens from leaving. But the paradox is that nobody has the human right, the civil right, or even the moral right to just come into another country, to stay there, work there, raise their children there, and become a citizen. That decision, that choice, is the right of a sovereign nation state. So when you come into a country with the idea of staying, you are looking at immigrating there. And that you have to do with the permission of a nation state. And every nation state has to make those choices, who can come in and who can't, because not everybody can. And they do that through immigration law.
In America, have we always had immigration laws?
Well, you know, that's another thing. People seem to have this idea that we always had open borders and that we always welcome families and that we always welcome immigrants, for that matter. And it's kind of interesting to read what the founding fathers say about that. Some of the founding fathers thought that we'd be able to replenish the country and make it grow just through natural births. Others said, well, maybe immigrants, but only those from English-speaking countries. But there wasn't any national law. It was actually done much more arbitrarily and probably unfairly because the cities and the states decided. You know, if an immigrant came, and there wasn't much immigration in those days because it was hard to get here. But, you know, a city and state boy in Boston, if you were a Catholic, forget about staying there. Jews weren't welcome in many places. That was a city and state decision. It didn't become a national law until after the Civil War, which is when many things that were belonged to the states suddenly became national. So our first immigration law was in the 1880s. That's also when we established Ellis Island as a port of entry, when we established Immigration and Naturalization Services. So we had a bureaucracy, the beginning of a bureaucracy. And it's the first time people started talking about, you know, officially who is a country going to let in as immigrants and not let in. And the basic requirement in those days were you had to be work able. And there's a lot of stories in Ellis Island about people who didn't get to come in. So we never really had open borders. And we really didn't care about families, not of slaves who were involuntary immigrants or indentured servants. Or most people who came here as immigrants were young people. We didn't have a policy that you can come in with your family and your grandparents and everything else. In fact, in most up until recently, when someone chose, one of the biggest decisions anybody can make is to leave their country and immigrate somewhere. And one of the consequences is you probably won't see your family again and your extended family. And your kids are going to be raised in another culture, another language. There's a lot of consequences for immigration. It doesn't just affect you. It affects your descendants and everything. I greatly admire immigrants, and that's why the strength of those immigrants who did that has been the strength of our country.
This said, this history noted, Peggy, today in 2018, how do we enforce immigration laws?
Well, when you make a law, and we've been making immigration laws, like I said, since the 1880s, immigration laws decides who can come in, who can stay, who can't, who can be, how we become a citizen. We also have to have how we enforce those laws. And we haven't been real good at that. We really haven't taken illegal immigration very seriously. It's only a misdemeanor in this country to be in the country illegally. And it was pretty much the modus operandi for a long time, that if you came in illegally or once you were here, you could stay. But in the 1980s, especially in Texas, they were starting to, the public schools were started to be impacted by a lot of children of illegal immigrants. And they were going to keep them from going to schools. So in 1983, the Supreme Court law said, no, we can't ask people what their immigration status is to go to school or to be treated in emergency hospitals. And then they started realizing we have millions of illegal immigrants. So President Reagan, he passed an amnesty with Kennedy. And they decided to amnesty anybody. That is, you give a blanket amnesty to anyone who was here illegally. But they put in a lot of other things that were supposed to stop illegal immigration from them. It was the first time it became illegal to hire someone who didn't have a work permit. So the employers were. But it wasn't enforced because we didn't have an agency to enforce it. The INS only did immigration services. They didn't want to enforce immigration laws. That all changed after 9/11. Suddenly, immigration became an issue of national security. They did away with the INS because it wasn't doing its job. They created the Department of Homeland Security. They divided the INS into two bureaus. One is called Citizenship and Immigration Services. That's the definitive word. The other one's Immigration and Customs Enforcement. For the first time, we had an agency to do enforcement inside the country. We've always had enforcers on the border. And even most people agree we should have some enforcement on the border. We've never had it inside. So ICE is a new animal, so to speak. Most people are rather conflicted about it because we never did it. But we have to have a way of enforcing immigration laws. And by the way, the ultimate enforcement measure is deportation. You cannot have immigration laws. They're meaningless if there's not deportation. That doesn't mean everybody. That does mean there's a lot of discretion. But it has to be done. It's done by every country in the world. And deportation is not a human rights violation. It's not a crime against humanity. It's an enforcement measure that's very common throughout the world.
There are three categories of immigration, one permanent, two right. temporary, and right. three illegal. Can right. you clarify the differences between those three categories?
Right. So, you know, we're talking about immigrants are people who come in with the intention of staying. You know, someone who's a tourist, they aren't really considered immigrants. Foreign students have never been considered immigrants. Foreign students are considered to be temporary visitors. And we have visiting professors. We have visiting musicians. We have visiting religious leaders. There's all kinds of categories that we now give temporary visas to. The gold standard, the one that a lot of people want, is the green card, which is called legally a permanent legal residence visa, PLR. And we give out 1.2 million green cards every year, new green cards. Now, since 1965, the priority for those green cards have been for extended family members, family unification, reunification. So this is an issue now we're starting to hear about. That wasn't true before. Now, since 1965, for green cards, it wasn't for temporary. So we give out over 2 million temporary visas every year. And therefore, like I say, this whole alphabet soup, H-1Bs, which are, you know, skilled workers, H-1As, agricultural workers, F visas for students, I mean, J visas for scholars. There's a whole alphabet soup. The one thing they all have in common, they're temporary. They have limited time. You're supposed to go home afterwards. But like I say, they've never been enforced. And nowadays, as illegal immigrants, then the third category is illegal. You come in without permission at all. Or you come in with a temporary visa and you overstay it. Again, because we never enforced it, this is becoming the largest source of illegal immigration now. As illegal immigration decreases on the southern border, the largest source of illegal immigration now are people overstaying their visas. We have over 1 million foreign students in the United States right now. And again, it doesn't matter what nationality they are. There's 60% are from two countries. And they are beginning to overstay.
Two terms, Peggy, that are out there in the headlines, it seems, more than ever on immigration are DACA and Dreamers. Can you tell our audience what DACA and Dreamers, what is that?
Okay, so Dreamers have been around for about 10 years. They actually started with Orrin Hatch, a Republican, a Mormon, very, very sympathetic. Mormons are very sympathetic about immigration, especially, in fact, they're our most multilingual community in the United States are Mormons. And he was very sympathetic to young, to immigrants who had come in at a very early age and who only knew the United States as their own country and were here illegally. And many of them didn't find out they were here illegally till they were teenagers, till they went to get a driver's license. And then they had to show their documents and their parents would go, oh, honey, I have something to tell you, you know, big shock. And you hear a lot of stories like that. So he called them Dreamers, and he wanted, and he and Ted Kennedy, there was a big push to pass a DREAM Act, there would be something like 4 million people would qualify. But it became such a sympathetic thing that the Democrats, who were pushing it mainly, they couldn't just let this group be, because the Republicans, a lot of Republicans said, yeah, great, let's do it, even in 2013. Even after the House refused to take the bipartisan comprehensive immigration bill, there was in July, the Republicans had a whole hearing on what they called the Kids Act. It was a DREAM Act. They were willing to legalize all the Dreamers in the country. And the Democrats said, oh, no, no, you can't do that. We want Dreamers legalized, but we want everyone else legalized, too, who's here illegally, about 11 million. So 4 million wasn't enough. So they refuse to support the Kids Act because they have been using Dreamers for over 10 years to push comprehensive immigration reform. So, okay, now we come to 2012, when President Obama's running for a second term. And he's in big trouble in the spring. And I went to a meeting of La Raza, it was about 10,000 people were at this meeting. It's the biggest Latino group in the United States, a fabulous group. And they had hundreds of Dreamers there screaming at him, demanding that he legalize the Dreamers. And he kept saying, I can't do that. That's not in my prerogative to do that. Only Congress can legalize, can give an amnesty, which is a legalization of people who have broken the law. But that was in 2011. In 2012, when he's in big trouble, it was looking like he was going to have problems winning the election. He suddenly, in June of 2012, he says, well, I can't legalize them, but I'm going to give them prosecutorial discretion from deportation. I will say that anybody who is a Dreamer will be given deferred action for childhood arrivals. That's DACA. Deferred action for childhood arrivals. It did not legalize them. I heard one reporter say, oh, it was a temporary green card. There's no such thing, you know. It didn't give them legal status. It gave them deferment. They had to apply individually. And the marketing term became anyone who was brought in at an early age by their parents illegally and only know this country as their own. Well, Link, there is not one of those words, not one, appears in the three-page DACA order. You'd think somebody would read it. Three-page DACA order or in any of the DREAM Acts. The description of a DREAMer and a DACA recipient is simply this. Anyone who came in the United States before the age of 16. That means they could come in legally. They could come in illegally. They could have been brought in by their parents. They could have been brought in by traffickers. They could have come in the back of the bus. They could have come in a port of entry. There's no description of that. It's only came in before the age of 16. Now, DACA says you have to have graduated from high school, which means you have to be at least 18. We're talking about adults. And DACA says they have to be under the age of 30. And they have to be illegally here when they apply, which is a great incentive to overstay a visa. So a DACA person is a millennial between the ages of 18 and 30 who came into the United States before the age of 16. That's it. That's quite a different image than a little child being brought in by, I like to say, their cooing, caring parents. And this is the only country they know. There are many like that. But less than 4% came in as infants. I've heard Ed Henry from Fox News say they came in as infants. Joe Manchin from West Virginia, he says, these are children who were brought in as infants. There's nothing about that in the documents. So it's terribly exaggerated. And I think as we get into this, the press has to do a better job about at least getting the description right. Like I said, it's a three-page document. In the very first page, it describes the DACA recipient as someone who came in the United States before the age of 16. I think we Americans should at least understand what that is and then cut through some of the hype, you know.
Peggy, immigration is a complicated, to our interview, an emotional subject. And it's Congress's decision to decide. Can you expand on that?
Right.
And in their deliberations, what would you say, from your perspective as a journalist covering it, the most effective route Congress could take on the issue of immigration today in 2018?
Well, let's say this. I mean, I've been covering it for 10 years, and I've written two books basically about how immigration laws evolved in this country. I'm very interested in, and you know, as a congressional journalist, we have to cover the committees. Do you know the committee that has a jurisdiction?
Go ahead.
For immigration?
Go right ahead.
It's the Judiciary Committee. It used to be the Labor Committee, because immigration is really about work. Immigrants come for work, and countries want them for their hard, wonderful, willing, grateful, energetic work. Now, but somehow it got into the Judiciary Committee. I explain about that in my book, and that's very interesting, too. But and the point is, we had our first comprehensive law in 1923. There was a lot of things happening, similar today, huge income inequality, a huge rush of immigrants between 1880 and 1920. I bet most people listening to this, that's when their relatives came in. Tremendous work violations. There was no laws regulating work. And the country was scared of communism. They were scared of an outside invasion. Now we're scared of ISIS. So they ended up having a very restrictive immigration law. It was called the National Origins Quota Act. It was based totally on your national origin. Now, in 65, when the next comprehensive bill came, the 1964, we had passed the Civil Rights Act. Kennedy had been killed. There was a huge liberal wave after Kennedy had been killed. And they passed
Lyndon Johnson's Great Society.
Yes, and then the Johnson's Great Society, the most liberal Congress ever, ever. They passed so many incredible liberal laws in 1965. But in 64, they passed the Civil Rights Act that forbade discrimination based on race, religion, creed, and national origin. In 1965, there was no doubt we had to change the immigration law. That was totally based on national origin, you know. So the big question was, how do we treat every nationality equal? This is for people applying for green cards. We didn't have temporary visas then. We did after 1965, but before we didn't. So how do we treat every nation equally? They came up with a formula. It's called the 7% formula. We still have it today. And then they decided that the immigrants that were going to be allowed in, that the priority was going to be on family unification. The 1965 Act was passed because of civil rights. And I have to say, and this is something basic to what Congress is talking about today, when they, especially Democrats, they talk about immigrants' rights and all that. This 1965 law did not make immigration a civil right. It is not. It just addressed that one issue about not discriminating. Now we've come to another crossroads. Do we really need family unification? You know, now we have Skype. We have easy travel. Technology has changed.
The internet.
The internet. It's not that you're never going to see your family again. Maybe we need to replace family preference for something else, maybe like skilled visas. That's a discussion that has to take place. So my main comment is here, immigration law is always going to be a work in progress. It's always going to be changing. And it doesn't help to make it an identity politics or a partisan thing. It shouldn't be partisan. This is a very complicated emotional duty of every nation state to decide who can come in and who can't. And not everybody can. Can I make a final analogy here that might help this?
Go for it, Peggy.
Okay, the analogy is this. Think of our country and Sweden and some of the other very popular, you know, nation states where people want to immigrate. Think of them as very popular colleges where everybody, you know, there are millions of people, let's say, for colleges, tens of thousands of people who they have the qualifications. They make great students. They would contribute so much. It's their dream to go to that college. Their lives would be changed to go to that college. But the college can't take everybody who qualifies. They have to choose. So they have admissions policies. Admissions policies change over time. But they have admissions policies that indicate how many they can take and what the qualifications are for the ones they take. And anybody can apply, just like immigrants. Anybody can apply. But the college gets to choose. If the student doesn't get in, they can't go storm the dorms. They can't go take the classes. They can't demand a degree. They didn't get in. They have to have a plan B. And I think it's a helpful analogy to think of immigration that way. You know, we want wonderful immigrants. We can't take everybody. We have to have admissions policies. And that's what Congress is doing. They are deciding what the admissions policies are. And it will always be a work in progress. And it's fascinating. I love covering it because it's just so multifaceted. And it's just so basic to our American way of life. But there's just so many myths. We don't have open borders. We never have. We have immigration laws. They have to be enforced. It's not Nazi to enforce an immigration law. Immigration is one of our biggest legacies. Now, almost every industrial country in the world realizes what a fantastic thing it is. And we have a lot of competition now from countries who want really skilled, productive immigrants, no? And that's what we're into. It's an incredibly fascinating subject. And it doesn't help if the press just makes it binary, makes it like a football game. Oh, you're either anti-immigrant or you're pro-immigrant. Or either you legalize everyone here illegally or you deport everybody. I mean, there's dozens of options in between. And there's many things that both Republicans and Democrats agree on. And that's what the conversation, that's what the press should be covering.
Peggy Sands Orchowski, thank you very much for joining us on the National Press Club podcast on immigration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.